The following is a presentation of Remnant. Light of the
world. Hey, this is Jeremiah from Remnant Church. Thanks for listening to us online. You know, we want you to be encouraged and filled with hope through your experience as you listen in. This life can be complicated, even confusing, but it's our hope that you catch a glimpse of God's unconditional love for you and His purpose for your life. Thanks for listening in.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jeremiah Vick.
All right, good morning. Oh, that was like a delayed good morning, so that's all right, though. I forgive you. So it's me this morning, and we're going to pick up where we left off. And Jerry and I were talking about this morning how last week he went up to verse 16 in chapter 2 of Colossians. This week, I'm starting in verse 16. So you actually get the same verse twice, but it really ties in and connects to both the things we're talking about. And we were also saying that if you read Colossians, I think it was Debbie that suggested on the message board that you read ahead and read through a little bit of Colossians before we get into our study, because, man, this is so amazing. I tell you, half hour, 45 minutes on a Sunday morning just doesn't really cover what we're talking about. It just, there's no way we can cram everything in. And so we both said it, we could do like three or four messages out of one passage. So today I'm going to do three or four messages. So I'll be 2 hours and 28 minutes. So you guys have the time right. Just kidding. I wouldn't do that to you without your permission. And I'm pretty sure I don't have that. So our series is called Up the Down Escalator. And this has been, really has been an upward battle, and I say battle because nights like last night, I'll tell you what, last night was difficult to study, but it was hilarious because between my son, Josiah, and our dogs, it was a madhouse. It really was. You know, Josiah, he always falls asleep in these adorable positions, and so we got to get out the camera, so it's like, you can't study when the child's sleeping. You got to go take pictures of him, right? And so he's doing all kinds of cool stuff, and then the dogs are just entertaining because they're still trying to figure out who Josiah is. They haven't quite, you know, figured out that he's a part of the family yet. All right. Actually, I think they have because someone went to hold Josiah and Sammy, one of our dogs, got mad at them. So he's a part of the pack now. And just to prove that he was part of the pack, Sammy and Abbott are our dogs, and they're Boston Terriers. We got them from Jerry and Lynette, and we love those dogs. And they have toys that they share, and then they have toys they don't share. Okay. And so their toys are kind of interchangeable. They have their own special toys, but most of them are interchangeable. And so I guess I just figured Josiah is just part of the crew there. And so I went out of the room for a little bit, and then I walked back in, and there's Abbott sitting there on the floor, and he has Josiah's pacifier in his mouth. And, you know, you would think a dog would, like, you know, have it between their paws and be all, you know, yanking on it and tearing it apart. No, he's sucking on it. He has it right in his mouth, and, you know, it's just, he looked pretty content, so I didn't want to disturb him. We did put pictures, Facebook and on Debbie's MySpace, or on MySpace, but anyway, it was hard to get a lot done last night because these small people and dogs were very, very entertaining last night. But nevertheless, you will never find me when it belongs to something my son is doing, you'll never find me overlooking it. It has my attention, no matter how small it is. Even if it's just so small as, you know, a noise that he makes when we're feeding him his bottle. Or that noise right there. It's attention to detail when you have someone that you love so much and someone that's so small and depends upon you. And so this morning, my title of my message is Majoring on the Minors. And so there's a time for attention to detail, and then there's a time where the detail can distract you from the main thing. You've heard the expression, majoring on the minors. That's when you make a big deal out of something small and you totally miss the big deal because all your attention is on the small thing that's going on. Have you done that before? It's kind of like when you're at a baseball game and you're trying to flag down the guy that has a popcorn, right, and you miss the home run. And you're like, well, what happened? Everybody stands up and they're cheering. You're like, what happened? What'd I miss? Your attention was on something small and not very significant, and something big was happening right in front of you. And so in the book of Colossians in chapter 2, we kind of pick up where Jerry left off last week, and still we're talking about the philosophies and the things that are going on that surrounded the Colossian church. And just as a reminder, the purpose of Colossians is to encourage the Colossians to go against the accepted philosophies and teachings of their culture and find everything they need in Christ. And so Paul writes this letter to the church at Colossae, and his whole point is, hey, I want you guys to keep your eyes on Jesus and don't get distracted by all the things that are going on around you. And really, it's a message for us today. And so today we're going to talk about three kind of big words, but we'll explain them and then they'll be small words. I like to take big words and break them down into small words. That's just something I like to do. Okay, maybe it comes from being a kid and building a sandcastle, and then after you build this great sandcastle, you destroy it, right? Bring it back to its basic element, sand. And if you could break it down even further, I would. So, three words. The first is legalism, the second is mysticism, and the third is asceticism. Don't be afraid of that last word, okay? Well, we're going to talk about those things, and by the time you leave here, you're going to be like, wow, I know what legalism, mysticism, and asceticism is. So, Colossians chapter 2, let me read the first two verses, or verses 16 and 17, the first two we're going to talk about. Paul says, so don't let anyone condemn you for what you eat or drink, or for not celebrating certain holy festivals, or new moon ceremonies, or Sabbaths. Okay, I'm going to pause right there just for a second, because Paul is talking about some things that for us, we have a kind of a hard time identifying with. He's basically saying, don't let someone judge you because of the things that you're eating or the things that you're drinking. Okay, well, I don't feel very often that people are judging me when I go to McDonald's versus Jack in the Box. Maybe there are some people that would. Maybe if you're in the same vehicle with me and I want to take you through Taco Bell and you're like, no way, it's Del Taco all the way. Okay, then we might have a problem. But for the most part, people don't judge you by what you eat. By what you drink, on the other hand, sometimes you can be judged by that. But Paul is here saying, and he's actually making a reference to things that were going on, because the Jewish people had a lot of rules and regulations when it came to what they could eat and what they couldn't eat. There was a lot of guidelines that they had. And so there were certain things that they were not supposed to eat, and there were certain things that they could eat. And so that was kind of the law, and it was the Old Testament law. And in the New Testament, Jesus came, and he replaced that law with something. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But Paul is saying, I don't want you to be so caught up in these old rules and regulations about what you can eat and what you can't eat, what you can drink and what you can't drink. See, some of these things were rules because some of the stuff wasn't necessarily healthy for the people. And some of them are rules just because God wanted to set his people aside so that they were different. And so for whatever reason, those rules were no more. And there's a couple places in the New Testament where we find that being talked about. But not only is he talking about what you eat and drink and not and those rules that they had, but he's also talking about celebrating certain festivals, new moon ceremonies, and Sabbaths. Why does he say these three different things? Well, first of all, the holy festivals, he's talking about something that would happen yearly. The new moon ceremonies, he's talking about things that would happen monthly. And then the Sabbath, obviously something that happens weekly. So he's pretty much covering just about every possible holiday that you could recognize. And so he's saying to them, don't let anybody judge you or condemn you because of what you eat or drink, or because you are or you are not honoring certain days. Okay, why is he saying this? What's the deal here? I believe the thing that we can walk away with from this is God is not impressed with diets and rituals. God is not impressed with diets and rituals. Okay, why do I say that? Not because I hate diets, which I do, by the way. It might be a little obvious, but yeah. I'm not a big diet person. I'm one of those people that when somebody is next to me and they order a Diet Coke, it just makes me want to order two Cokes to make up for that one that they should have ordered. So that's kind of how I am. But here's the thing. Basically, Paul is saying, you know what? God is not so concerned about these outward things that you're able to do, about these rituals and these traditions and all this stuff. Matter of fact, I would say it like this. It's not what you eat or what traditions you keep that make you a spiritual person. It is the capacity that Jesus holds in your life that determines your spirituality. Okay, so it's not what you eat or what you drink. It's not about the rituals that you honor or that you perform. But it's about how much of your life Jesus has a hold of. how important Jesus is, what priority Jesus has in your life. That's what tells you what kind of a person you are or how spiritual a person you are. Okay, so this first part of the passage we're looking at has to deal with the word legalism. And so the word legalism, we're going to define it here. It means strict adherence to a literal interpretation of a law, rule, or a religious or moral code. Okay, so if someone is legalistic, they are following the law down to the detail. And let me just tell you something. The Jewish people had laws that God had given them, but then they also created more on top of that because they were like, okay, God's drawing the line here. We're going to draw the line way over here because we don't want to even get anywhere near doing something wrong. And so they were really caught up in this whole idea of being legalistic and not doing anything that was against the commandments. And by the way, the reason that God gave us his commandments is to simply announce to us that it's impossible to keep them. Okay? The reason that we have the Ten Commandments is simply to say, hey, here's 10 things that you can't do. Not by yourself. You need some help in order to do those things. And so that's where Jesus comes in. And so you might ask yourself, or maybe you're thinking this, and maybe you're not, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. Okay, isn't there certain things that I do that people would look at me and say, yeah, that's the kind of person they are because of what they do? Okay, there's something we need to be real careful about here because there's actually a couple of principles here. First of all, God tells us that we have freedom in Christ, which means you have freedom to pretty much do whatever you think is right before God, okay? In other words, if you're a person that wants to eat fried chicken, then go for it, okay? Fried chicken is probably not that big of a deal, right? Okay, well, there's other things that people might frown on, maybe cigarettes, drinking alcohol, things like that. Now, here's the thing. There are things that God doesn't say, hey, I don't want you to do this. There are some things that God does say. I mean, in 1 Corinthians, God is very clear when he says, don't get drunk, okay? But he never says, don't drink alcohol. As a matter of fact, Jesus' first miracle in the Bible, his first recorded miracle, was changing the water into wine, an alcoholic beverage. And it wasn't water into Welch's. It was water into wine. Okay, and a matter of fact, Paul encouraged Timothy to drink a little bit of wine for his stomach's sake. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're going to go home and you'll be like, Jeremiah said I'm supposed to be drinking. Well, obviously there's some rules that apply here. If you're under the age of 21, then you shouldn't be drinking. As a matter of fact, I know very few people that are drinking that are under the age of 21 that do so in moderation. The fact is, God has given us the ability to make decisions on our own. There are certain things that God says, don't do this because it's wrong before me and it's bad for you. And then there are other things where God says, on an individual basis, I will convict you, or I will tell you if that's right for you or that's wrong for you. Okay? So guess what? We actually have to use our brains and we have to think about our situation. We have to think about an action that we do. Is this action that I'm doing, is this going to be something that's going to offend somebody? Is this going to be something that is going to put me in a bad light? You have to think through those things and make your decision based on that. How am I representing Jesus in this situation? So there's some thinking involved and you really have to. You know, it doesn't come down to just following a code or following a law. As a matter of fact, when Jesus came, he didn't do away with the law, but he fulfilled the law. And so all those old laws that they were supposed to keep, they didn't have to keep those laws anymore because Jesus came and he said, you know what? Now you're under grace. Now I'm giving you the right to make this decision. I want you to do what honors me, and it's up to you to decide what that is. Now, obviously, he's given us some incredible guidelines, and if you're not spending time in God's word, you might be doing some things that are offensive to God and you don't even know it yet. So I encourage you to plug in. Case in point, may or may not have heard of a guy named Arthur Guinness. He was a guy who lived in Ireland, 1800s. Arthur Guinness was a devout Christian. He was a guy that really had a good, strong relationship with God. As a matter of fact, his entire family did. And one day, Arthur Guinness is walking down the streets in Ireland and he is just pouring out his heart to God and he's praying and saying, God, do something about my country. The people of his country were getting drunk all the time. They were going into the bars and into the whiskey houses, and they were constantly drunk, and it was an epidemic. And so he was crying out to God, God, do something about my country because alcoholism is going to kill, it's going to destroy Ireland. And so check out what the guy did. Because of his Christian worldview, he decided to brew his own beer. And so the beer that he brewed was a very heavy beer, okay? Had a lot of iron in it. And his idea was, I'm going to brew a beer that's so heavy that no one can drink more than like a pint of this at a time. And so they'll drink a pint, and it also had very low alcohol content, and then they'll be full and they'll be satisfied and they won't be able to drink anything else. And so it sounds crazy to think that here's a guy who's trying to solve a problem in his country or trying to address a problem in his country by making beer, but that's what he did. And so is what he did right? I think so. I think God gave this guy a vision. I think God gave him something to do. I don't know if Guinness Beer is still doing that today, but but the fact is, in his time and in his culture and in that place, God gave him a job to do, and he did it. Here's a passage that talks about what Jesus has to say about what you eat and what you drink. Mark 7, verses 18 and 19. He says, "Don't you understand either?" he asked. "Can't you see that food you put into your body cannot defile you? Food doesn't go into your heart, but only passes through the stomach and then goes out into the sewer." By saying this, he declared that every kind of food is acceptable in God's eyes. Okay, now, a little bit graphic, but what is he saying here? He's saying that you're going to eat something and you're going to expel it. We've experienced that a lot since we've had our baby. He eats stuff and then he expels it. And sometimes it seems like he's expelling more than he's eating. How's that happen? I don't know. But the principle here is that this is not something that decides what kind of a person you are. This is not something that gets into you and gets into your heart and changes who you are. So what's Jesus saying? He's saying there's a lot of good stuff out there for you, and there's a lot of stuff that we want you to enjoy. And he says, it's all there for you. I've made it for you. And so that maybe kind of speaks into the whole idea of having certain rules about what you can and cannot eat. Now, obviously, if you're on a diet, knock yourself out. Romans 14:5. And here he's addressing now the issue of the day that you worship. He says, in the same way, some think one day is more holy than another day, while others think every day is alike. You should each be fully convinced that whichever day you choose is acceptable. What's he saying? He's saying, I don't care what day you dedicate to me and you worship, but so long as you're doing it. Okay? There's kind of a big, you know, controversy with, are we supposed to, worship on a Saturday? Are we supposed to worship on a Sunday? Are we supposed to worship on, a Wednesday night? When are we supposed to worship? Well, the answer is all the time. All right? But God did say, I want you to set aside a specific day when everybody gathers together and spends time in corporate worship. And so what is Paul telling us in Romans? He's saying, hey, whatever day that is, cool. Matter of fact, when we first talked about starting Remnant, Jerry and I, we were like, what day should we have church? And that was a legitimate question. What day should this happen? What time should it happen? We had an idea. We wanted to maybe start the service like at, at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock? Everybody get together for lunch, and then we have the service. But then we thought, no, you guys would just sleep during the message. So, you get a good meal in your stomach, and you're gone. Galatians 5:13. And right here, I think, is a pivotal verse. I mean, this is like the key verse when it comes to understanding where this whole idea of what you can and cannot do. For you have been called to live in freedom, my brothers and sisters. But don't use your freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. Instead, use your freedom to serve one another in love. Wow. That verse right there really tells me what I can and cannot do. Okay? It's no longer a list of rules and regulations. Instead, it's God saying, I give you freedom, but in using your freedom, don't satisfy your own sinful desires. In other words, don't do things that you know are wrong and you know that are offensive to me and you know that are bad for you. And then he adds, instead, use your freedom to serve one another in love. So you're not just concerned about yourself, but you're concerned about the people around you. Okay? So Paul addresses legalism in this first part. Let's look at verse 17. Could you back that up? Sorry. To verse 17, I forgot to read this. There it is. Okay. Verse 17, it says, for these rules are only shadows of the reality yet to come, and Christ himself is that reality. Isn't that incredible? I love the way this is worded, because what is he saying? He's saying that all these rules and regulations that belong in the past, They were all pointing towards Jesus. They were all pointing towards Jesus. In other words, these were the minors. Jesus is the major. Don't get lost in the minors. Don't major on the minors. Okay, fast forward. Sorry about that, Jerry. I like to make it really hard for you back there, so sometimes you make it hard for me, so we share that. Okay, looking at verse 18. Don't let anyone defraud you by insisting on pious self-denial or the worship of angels, saying that they've had visions about these things. Their sinful minds have made them proud. And they are not connected to Christ, the head of the body, for he holds the whole body together with its joints and ligaments, and it grows as God nourishes it. Okay, so now Paul addresses something else. He addressed legalism a moment ago, and now he addresses another thing, which we call mysticism. And here's what he's saying, because, by the way, this was something that was kind of floating around, but it's also something that is a big deal today, because there is a big return or a big focus on the mystical in today's society. All you have to do is read the tabloids or People Magazine or something and see what all the celebrities are up to. I mean, these guys are into some weird stuff, okay? The fact is, there's a lot of things out there that might appeal to you because it sounds kind of mysterious. You know, it's the whole X-Files thing, right? I mean, you have these two agents, one that is always trying to see things from the scientific and logical side, and then you've got, that's Scully, right, the girl, and then you've got Mulder, the guy who's always trying to see things from, you know, the supernatural side. And so we're drawn to the supernatural. You might turn on the television and they'll have these shows. There's like shows called like Ghost Chasers or Haunted Houses, and it's kind of fun. I'll be watching TV. We don't have TV at our house, but when we go to Debbie's parents' house, I'll be watching TV and I'll get stuck on these channels where they're talking about ghosts and stuff because I'm like, wow, this is, you know, crazy. It's creepy, you know, it makes you feel weird. Anyway, but there's this incredible attraction to the mystical. And Paul says here, don't let anyone defraud you by insisting on pious denial or the worship of angels, saying they had visions about these things. Now he's saying, don't get caught up in people that would say to you, if you're not worshiping in this mystical way, then you're not really worshiping, okay? And I think what we can walk away with from this one is, you can't reach God by mystical means. You can't reach God by mystical means. Because there are people that would tell you that in order for you to become more spiritual, you have to be involved in something mystical or magical. You have to have some sort of a great, incredible emotional experience and be all caught up in the moment in order for you to truly be a spiritual person. And Paul is warning the Colossian church, don't allow them to defraud you. And what he means when he says defraud you, he says don't allow them to make you think that you're being cheated because you're missing out on that stuff. You can't reach God by mystical means. Matter of fact, I'd put it like this. You cannot become more spiritual through mystical forms of worship or by experiences based on emotions and sensations. It's so tempting. Seems like the last, 10 years or so, there's been such a big focus on angels. Have you noticed that? I mean, it's like there's constantly movies coming out about angels and about the supernatural realm. I remember one of the first movies that I remember that was about an angel. Well, now that I just say that, I thought of like five more, but... But one movie I remember was a movie with John Travolta in it, a movie called Michael. And so John Travolta plays an angel, but he's like a angel that cusses and smokes cigarettes and, you know, is mean. And it's like, you know, where did they get that picture of what an angel is supposed to be like? And then you have other places where angels are represented as, you know, Jerry mentioned, you know, the chubby angel that shoots a bow and arrow at you. And it really distorts the reality of who angels are. First of all, angels are messengers from God. That's what they mean. But they're also warriors, okay? And there are several different descriptions of angels, and I encourage you to read Revelation and see some descriptions of angels. Matter of fact, one of the first descriptions of an angel in the Bible is in Genesis when Adam and Eve get kicked out of the garden. Remember? They get the boot. They didn't pay their rent, so God kicks them out. No. When they offended God or when they sinned, God says, you have to leave my paradise, and he placed these angels to guard the entrance to the Garden of Eden. And they had flaming swords, okay? And they were huge, and they were frightening. And Adam and Eve were like, see you later. We won't be back, okay? I mean, on Valentine's Day, Those angels with the flaming swords, they can pass right over my house. I don't want anything to do with those guys. The fact is, we have distorted who angels are. And the Bible specifically says that angels are not to be worshipped. When John has a vision that God gave him, and there's an angel that appears before him as a messenger from God, and John is tempted to fall down and worship, the angel says, hey, stop, don't worship me, because I'm a fellow servant of God just like you. And so we're forbidden to worship angels. And yet, people will build religions and build belief systems around worship of angelic beings or heavenly beings that are different from God, and it's just not right. So mysticism, what does it mean? Let's define that. Mysticism is the belief that direct knowledge of God, spiritual truth, or ultimate reality can be obtained through subjective experience. What is subjective experience? It is an experience that's based on emotion. Okay? It's an experience that's based on something exciting, something sensational. If you have to go through life and you have to find your spiritual moments in an emotional or a sensational event, you know what you're going to end up doing? You're going to end up jumping from emotional point to emotional point. And in between that, you're going to be in a valley. And I know people like that. I know people that are bummed out, they're depressed, and then all of a sudden, one day, they're happy, and they're like, God is good, God is great. And then the next day, they're back in the pit again because they're going from one emotional high to the next. And Paul is warning the Colossians, don't get caught up in that. Don't get caught up in that whole idea. Ephesians 4:17, here's a great verse. It's from the Message, so it's a paraphrase. It says, and so I insist, and God backs me up on this, that there be no going along with the crowd, the empty-headed, mindless crowd. They've refused for so long to deal with God that they've lost touch, not only with God, but with reality itself. And so be warned, my friends, if something sounds kooky, it probably is. I mean, there's some things that are just common sense, but anything that involves worship other than worshiping God, and typically anything that involves crazy visions or experiences like that, probably not going to lead you in the right direction. Could God speak to you through a vision? Yeah, he did it, you know, in the Bible. I don't know how often it happens. God's never spoken to me in a vision. If he speaks to you in visions, that's awesome. As a matter of fact, I'd like to know about that afterwards. But the thing is, God has given us his word, and so God's primary form of communication with us comes through his word. And so the reason I tell you that is because I don't want you to get caught up in something that sounds mysterious and cool, because it probably is going to be misleading. Okay? Ezekiel 13:7. Here we have the same problem being addressed in Ezekiel's day. Can your visions be anything but false if you claim this message is from the Lord when I've not even spoken to you? So even here we have an instance where he's saying, you know what? You can't claim something's from God because God is not always speaking through those forms. And so you can't reach God by mystical means. So let's get back to the passage of verse 20. I'm going to read 20 through 23. You have died with Christ, and he has set you free from the spiritual powers of this world. So why do you keep on following the rules of the world, such as don't handle, don't taste, don't touch? Such rules are mere human teachings about things that deteriorate as we use them. These rules may seem wise because they require strong devotion, pious self-denial, or severe bodily discipline, but they provide no help in conquering a person's evil desires. So now Paul approaches the next thing, which is a thing called asceticism, and we'll talk about what that means. Here he says, when you're getting to a place where you're denying yourself, you're disciplining yourself, you're punishing yourself because somehow you think that that is going to bring you closer to God, Paul says that's a bad thing. So I would say this, or this is what we can learn. Self-denial does not score points with God. Self-denial does not score points with God. Now, I'm not talking about saying, God, I want your will to be done in my life and not my own. I'm not talking about doing that because that's a good thing. But if you were to say, okay, I'm going to buy myself a whip, and I'm going to beat myself at night because then maybe I'll be good the next day. That would be a bad thing. You're punishing yourself, hoping that somehow by punishing yourself or by doing something that denies you something, or deprives you of something, that you're going to somehow gain more spiritual significance in God's eyes. And it's just not going to happen. There was a guy that pretty much embodied this, who lived in the 5th century. His name was Simeon Stylites. Simeon Stylites. And this guy was very, very into this whole asceticism. And this is what he would do. He belonged to a monastery at one point, and he would fast, and he wouldn't eat, and he wouldn't drink for extended periods of time. And finally, the other monks would come in, they would try to bring him food or whatever, and when they would try to bring him food and water, then this guy would just be passed out. You know, it'd be hard to revive him. When they finally revived him, matter of fact, one time he had wrapped some palm branches around himself to keep himself, you know, from being hungry. So he tied them really tight around his waist, and they actually had kind of started growing into him. And so they had to remove all this stuff. And so the dude actually gets kicked out of the monastery for being too much of a self-denier, or being too much of a person that punished himself for God's sake. So this guy goes on to do all kinds of crazy stuff. The thing that he's most famous for is, there's a couple things he's famous for, but one of the things he's most famous for is he decided that he was going to deprive himself of just about everything, and he was going to live on a pillar. And so he found himself a pillar that was still standing amongst some ruins, and it started out, he found a pillar that was like 10 meters high or something, and so he chose to live on top of that pillar, on the small, you know, space on top of that pillar. And he did that for a while, and then he actually moved to a different pillar because that one wasn't high enough or whatever, and eventually ended up on one that was like 20 meters high, and he lived on that for like 37 years. Crazy, ridiculous. The guy used to cut himself and allow maggots to infest his wounds because he wanted to experience the suffering and pain because he thought that it was going to bring himself closer to God. My definition of the guy is absolutely crazy. It's ridiculous. It really is. Self-denial does not score points with God. To be honest with you, God doesn't love this guy any more than he loves any one of you guys. He hasn't made a difference. God feels no different about him because of that. Well, God's probably a little disappointed that he's doing all that stuff to himself. But then again, that was back in the 5th century, so we don't have to worry about that guy anymore. So I might say this. It is impossible to earn special favor with God or spiritual strength by merely living a life of depriving or punishing yourself. Don't get caught up in that. Don't get caught up in abusing yourself because you think somehow that it's going to make things right and somehow God's going to be honored by it. You know, you do something wrong and you punish yourself instead of just going to God and asking God for forgiveness. Asceticism, let's give it a definition. Asceticism is leading a life of self-denial as a measurement of faith or spirituality. So if you would deny yourself or deprive yourself of something and you would allow that to be like your spiritual thermometer and you would say, this is how spiritual I am, this is how close to God I am, and I recognize it because I deny myself all these things. That's not how you gain favor with God. As a matter of fact, you really can't gain any more favor with God than you already have because God already loves you unconditionally and there's really nothing you can do to make God love you more. 1 Timothy 4, verse 4. Since everything God created is good, we should not reject any of it, but receive it with thanks. How's that for a verse that addresses self-denial? God says, hey, don't deny yourself anything because I've given you everything. What happens when you get caught up in this whole thing of self-denial? I'll tell you what happens. You get prideful. That's what happens. Because you say to yourself, you know what? Through this self-denial, I can conquer these things. Matter of fact, C.S. Lewis put it this way. He says, pride can often be used to beat down the simple vices. Many a man has overcome cowardice or lust or ill temper by learning to think they are beneath his dignity. The devil is perfectly content to see you become chaste, brave, and self-controlled, provided all the time he is setting up in you the dictatorship of pride. See, when you deny yourself things and think somehow that you're scoring points with God, that just develops more and more pride in you. And God is telling us, self-denial doesn't score points with me. Romans 14, verses 7 and 8, and I want to end with this. Verse says, for we don't live for ourselves or die for ourselves. if we live, it's to honor the Lord, and if we die, it's to honor the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord. And here's a defining principle. If you're doing the things that you know are honoring to God, and that God's word is not convicting you or denying you that, then you're doing the right thing. Let God's word be the standard. Let God's word be the way you measure your spirituality. It doesn't have to be diets and rituals. It doesn't have to be some sort of a mystical experience. It doesn't have to be self-denial. See, Paul is telling the Colossian church, these things are really tempting to get caught up in. But what do these things do? They all focus on you. They all focus on yourself. And Paul is saying, you know what? You're a minor detail. God is the major thing. Don't major on the minors. Don't focus on these small things when the main thing is Jesus.
Light of the world. You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com. You